I'm Antonia, and this is Admit One, where each week we challenge a special guest with the unenviable task of picking their top three favourite films.
There's that definitive image of Bette Davis in the black taffeta kind of silk dress.
My guest on this episode for our London Fashion Week special is journalist, writer and director Davina Catt.
Every fashion blog and every site I've ever read or seen, at some point in time, they post something of Roller Girl in her yellow Lolita sunglasses behind the Polaroid camera.
Hello, Davina.
Hello, Antonia.
Hello.
Nice to be here.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Now, I'm so excited to have you here today because this is really kind of our first Admit One special where we're really focusing on the fashion and style of films. So we've switched up the format and not only asked you to pick your three favourite films, but your three favourite films where you specifically love the styling. So we're going to come on to that in a minute. But first of all, Davina, you're a journalist, a writer, a director as well, but you have always had experience and links to, you know, something of a sort of acting, film-orientated dynasty, haven't you?
Absolutely. My grandfather's a film producer in the sort of old kind of Hollywood era. So that old glamour has always been what's completely kind of taken my breath away. And I am so worried sitting here that I'm going to give everyone spoilers. So I can't mention one of the films I've picked, but it will be revealed in the second half of this podcast. But yes, no, I have. And it's always been so interesting to see how it's linked in to fashion and how I think, you know, more and more they become so collaborative and intertwined.
Off podcast, we were just talking about how much we loved La La Land. And there's something about the magic where you've got an era. Well, that's a bit of a twist because, of course, it has those retro nods, but it is current day. You know, suddenly she's driving a Prius. You're like, what? I thought we were in the 50s. Yeah. But, you know, those the costume can really push the story.
No, it's so our costumes, like, you know, I don't think people kind of realise enough how not only do they get the audience to engage in a character and also help us as that character arcs and develops and changes and, you know, represent exactly how they're feeling and who they are at that stage. They're like visual markers in a film. One thing I loved about La La Land was that yellow dress, which has now become sort of talk of the town, and was actually just by H&M. Brilliant, you know, $1 million production in Hollywood starring H&M dress.
Who are you looking forward to seeing the most this Oscars season? Because we're talking about films we've seen recently. For me, she's not in a film really that's nominated at all this year, but Cate Blanchett's one of my favourites.
Yep.
And Emma Stone.
Well, you've been speaking earlier on how you're La La crazy. I mean, we all slightly are, but you're going to be watching it for your second time
Gosling
soon.
Stone, crazy.
So, Gosling Stone. I think the director was saying somewhere that they're sort of the closest to the Ginger Rogers, Fred Astaire that we have today. So again, that's that old movie star glamour thing that I love, and they've been paired together a few times. They have a great chemistry. So that's amazing to see as well. And I think that will be a real highlight, or it has also been so far, the Golden Globes, etc., will be a real highlight, the way they come together, if you like. I'm a great Natalie Portman fan, so
and
she's
I mean,
obviously there for Jackie.
Can you think of anything worse than being 8 months pregnant and having to do all of the award ceremonies?
Oh my God.
And with such beauty, poise and grace, I'd be like, guys, FaceTime me in. I'm done. My ankles are swollen. Seriously, I'm fine.
How do they do that? None of them ever get swollen ankles or swollen faces. I'm like,
I don't know. All sweaty faces. There's got to be something in this.
And I don't think she'll be there this time, but I always think Keira Knightley looks a knockout on the red carpet, so she's one of my favourites. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be exciting times.
I know, it's very exciting. So, Davina, for our London Fashion Week special, not only have we given you the challenge of picking your three favourite films, but sort of your three favourite costume and styling in the films. So what is your first choice?
Well, before I reveal my choices, I just want to say that, my God, was this a big task trying to narrow it down?
Yes, was it?
I had such a long list, and every time I went back to it, I was like, maybe not that one. And then I kept like changing and alternating, and it took me so long to actually narrow it down to the three. And the reason why I picked these three also is because they're very, very different. So it will give everyone a bit of variety listening.
Well, once we reveal and discuss the third, I want to hear what else was on your list, because I bet you've got some very, very stylish films. So in at number one, Davina, who have we got?
Okay, well, the first one I'm going to talk about is the oldest one. I wanted to include here an old Hollywood MGM classic since we've been talking about La La Land. And so I've picked All About Eve, which is one of those iconic old sort of glamour, old Hollywood films, particularly because of its visual appeal and the styling and the costumes, which were done by the legendary Edith Head, who also needs to be mentioned because she's sort of done more for costumes and clothes and films than probably everyone after her. And it's also often picked as a film because it has Bette Davis starring in this very kind of strong female lead role, which, don't forget, this was early 50s. So, you know, if people are constantly talking about not enough strong female leads today, so you can imagine what it was like back then. And she gives this really commanding performance. And then the other thing is that Marilyn Monroe had her film debut in this film. So wow. There are a few, like, there are some real kind of markers in it.
To anyone who's listening, who's maybe thinking, this sounds amazing, but, you know, what's it about?
It's basically about this huge kind of movie star, theatre star, who there's this fan girl who comes to watch her performance, every day, and hangs out in the kind of background trying to get a chance to meet her. They finally feel sorry for her, bring her in, and she becomes the assistant to the main character, Margot, and she then connives her way through the Hollywood system and keeps imitating her and ends up becoming the sort of star actress herself who wins all the awards. So it's kind of a bit of a play on the whole politics of the film world.
And what is it about the styling and the costume? You say that it's wonderfully old Hollywood and old-fashioned. What is it that really stands out for you?
Well, also it's in black and white. So, I mean, that's pretty phenomenal that it's so as stylish as it is and you can't actually use the colour. But I think it's because it's quite an ensemble cast of women. So although you have the main character, you then have the Anne Baxter's Eve, and then you have the wife of the theatre director, and then you have Marilyn Monroe, for instance, as a kind of, you know, she's only a small part. So there are a lot of them always on stage, always sort of in the scenes together. So it's very much they contrast and keep the characters very different through costume to keep them very nuanced and very definitive about who and what they are. And it's beautiful, you know, elegant 50s bar jackets, pussy bow blouses, sequin gowns. And then there's the very definitive image, which, you know, I think for a lot of people in film history, if you say sort of 50s cinema, there's that definitive image of Bette Davis in the black taffeta kind of silk dress with the cinched waist and the full skirt. And there's a big story to tell that basically they thought they weren't going to be able to shoot the scene because they got to filming on the day and the dress that they'd picked out for it, maybe she'd lost weight or something, but it didn't fit her around the shoulders. It kept kind of slipping off. And so they're like, oh my God, what are we going to do? Because we can't change filming. So then she was like, well, why don't we just pull it down the shoulders? So then it became an off-the-shoulder dress, which wasn't really around at that time. And that's become that definitive image of her.
That's amazing. I've never heard that. So it was really ahead of its time in what sounds like almost an all-female cast.
Yeah.
And then kind of progressive in terms of its styling and its costume.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, that's amazing. And that's,
and it was,
you
very
know, for
authentic
then, that's very
did
sexy
it.
And that's showing a lot of flesh.
Yeah, showing a lot of flesh. And then you get Marilyn Monroe, who's contrasted when she comes in because she's the sort of ingenue and she's in this white sequin gown when they're all in black. And it was really pushing the boat for the time. So the clothes have stood the test of time because it's so easy to go back and look at something like that and it's feel very passé and very outdated now, but you go back and you look and you're just like, no, that is just so elegant. And pussy bow blouses everywhere now, you know,
it is amazing when you can think of films in black and white, how much harder they had to work to make any sort of visual impact, because on screen things would fall so flat. So they must have, all the textures you're saying, taffeta and pussy bow blouses, really pushing the costume department.
Yeah.
So it leaves an impression, what, where are we?
Over 50 years later.
Over 60
exactly.
years later, which is incredible. Is that genre of film one that you do have a real soft spot for, the costume and that sort of era?
Yeah, definitely. I think, as you're saying, they had to work so much harder then. And I just think, how many films will you actually... Hopefully the ones I've picked will continue being referenced for a long time, but a lot of them today. I mean, will we look back, you know, in 50 years and say, oh, God, weren't those costumes amazing? Wasn't that elegant? And wasn't that female character so progressive and strong? And if I hadn't have picked that one because I wanted to pick an old one, I would have gone with a Katharine Hepburn film, because she obviously was into the androgyny and she was so bold and so quirky and daring for her time as a woman and being accepted women coming on set in trousers, which all the Paramount bosses wanted them to be in, sort of, you know, skirts and knickers.
Which is just extraordinary. You know, when I think of Katharine Hepburn, I do think of her as like the pioneer of that look, you know, her Coco Chanel and almost like an early Annie Hall, that idea of, you know, the 70s, of course, by that point, Marilyn Monroe, Audrey Hepburn, everyone had worn those little cigarette pants and those lovely little sort of cashmere tees. But, you know, it is a long time ago, but it does seem extraordinary that people thought women really should just be in their skirts and dresses. I mean, I'd be doomed. I'm in a jumpsuit. This would have been really unacceptable. So that takes us on to your second choice, Davina. What is your next film?
My next choice, and as I was saying, I'm paying homage to it in a Russian embroidered Milchenko jacket now, but it's Anna Karenina. Now, one thing that's really difficult about doing period pieces now is you think, oh, that's so obvious. You just go and either make pieces to reflect pieces from the 1870s or you go and source things. One of the famous pieces in the film worn by Anna Karenina herself, it was inspired by an 1870s cape that they saw exhibited in the V&A, the one with the fur around the collars that she's wearing when she gets on the train to go to Moscow, and with the full blue taffeta skirt, and it's actually embroidered with peacocks. And again, that was a detail that they thought up, because apparently at the time of the 1870s in Russia, peacocks were actually an unlucky motive. So it was unlucky because she was about to go meet her fate, as she was, you know, had been having her affair with Count Vronsky and was going to be cast out of sort of Russian society. So it was, again, it was a detail that they chose to put, and she was wearing a hat with a peacock feather in the side. And it's just things like that which are so minute you don't think about, but it's one of the most lasting images from the film and in kind of modern cinema. But then that film is interesting because the director, Joe Wright, when he does a film, he knows how he wants it and how he sees it. And he wanted it to be very stylized, very stagey, and it was actually filmed on a stage. So what they did is to give it a modern feel, and so it didn't feel passé and old and like it was just trying to recreate the 1870s, they mixed in a lot of 50s couture silhouettes. So obviously a lot of the pieces were made up, with the costume designer amalgamating references of 1870s Russian paintings and photographs and wallpaper, and then kind of 50s Balenciaga and Dior.
That kind of Dior silhouette. Because I was reading that with Joe Wright, he, exactly as you said, wanted it to feel modern to a younger audience. Do you think, in terms of films that do try and update what is kind of like a retro look or a very old-fashioned style, do you think it's important that they do make it quite palatable for people who are younger, who might find it a bit kind of too old-fashioned?
I do. I think the way it worked with Anna Karenina is it wasn't... I mean, the story stays true to itself, and the Anna Karenina figure, which is obviously one of the most well-known lead and controversial women, if you like, in literature, you know, that stays very true to the torment she was suffering inside, between what was kind of expected of what she did and what she actually wanted to do. And I think also through the costumes, we engage with her. We feel that torment and we can relate to it. I think there were three standout moments. There's the one I've said about on the train. Then there's when she first has her dance with Vronsky, when she is about to then start a kind of liaison with him. And that's that red dress, which was actually made out of two pieces, because it looks like it's just a complete big wide skirted all in one, but it was actually done with two pieces. It's like a bustle kind of thing, Which is actually quite cropped at the front, and then a full skirt which goes down at the back, and then there's like this 1950s kind of sequin trim around the middle. And then there was also the veils that they used when she's in her deep despair. She's even got the veil over her face. Again, that's unusual for a film to actually have her in her veil. Normally it would just be an ornament, if you like, but they wanted to show that drama and show that state that she was in. And of course then there's the black dress, which is the kind of historical black dress as she's in her descent and her mourning, and all the people around her at the party, if you look at it closely, they're all in like pastely colours to give her the enormity. And the thing about it is she's got to stand out, Anna. She's got to be the one that's the main role in this situation. And so she's contrasted with, say, Kitty, who is the character that wanted Vronsky. And she's sort of made to be childlike and wear like a shorter dress in white with pink roses. And, you know, again, we don't think about it, but how much these costumes are thought about and how that can sort of add to the story. And we see, you know,
almost
we
like
see them so distinctively.
That sort of sophistication and that kind of couture look and the drama of black against something that sounds very little girl. And
little
very
girl,
innocent.
Yeah. And the Kitty character line then develops by wearing sort of champagne and beiges as her character grows, and she then marries the Levin character. And then there's the drama of Anna and her costumes, which are so kind of, although so detailed and put together so incredibly well with such flair, they're big costumes. And that's then against her husband, the actual Jude Law character, who's very strict, very Tsar military uniform, his glasses that he peers over, you know, to show the contrast of his rigidity against her drama and her going with her emotions kind of thing.
And of course, like we say, it's enforcing the characters. So it is that kind of, he's masculine and he's strong and she's ample bosomed and nipped at the waist and cinched and hips and bum. And as you said earlier, how you can leave a film and overlook the minute nuance and detail of every bead and every embellishment is amazing. The responsibility that is on the costume director is
huge. Well, I mean,
huge.
I know reading, I did sort of, you know, I wrote, I think I even spoke once with Jacqueline Duran, who's the costume designer for the Joe Wright films. And I mean, the details and having to mix this 50s silhouette with 1870s references is just, you know, I mean, how do you do that?
I know. I mean, I'm trying to think of it in my mind and I'm like, 50s, I can envision. My 1870s references aren't that strong.
And then she said, actually, you know what, you go around to all these costume things that apart from the V&A, I think that was, you know, so difficult to find sort of proper 1870s period pieces. I mean, where do you actually find that from?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a mammoth task. So from the 1870s to the 1970s. So what is your third
to the
film?
1970s, but the 1970s filmed in 1990. So for all those Boogie fans out there, Boogie Nights. And it's 70s. It's glam. It's got a huge cult following as a film. And I think it's become so much so because of the visual kind of, you know, 70s and the way it's styled and done. I mean, that's so much part of it. But again, it was actually made in the 1990s. So you don't want it to look like it's actually a 70s film. That's not the point of it. And the director, Paul Thomas Anderson, he's a very, he's one of my favourite directors, actually. He's very innovative and he's got an amazing visual eye. And I think that really carries through in this film. If it hadn't been someone like him, it could have gone incredibly wrong if you think about this kind of dark, seedy porn world in the 70s and trying to do like pool scenes. And I mean, what film has a character permanently on roller skates called Roller Girl? I mean, you've got to love that.
I love it. She makes me want roller skate.
It makes it want
I think
roller
Heather
skate,
Graham in that film really did make me try and roller skate, and it really
when she's
was
in the
disaster.
Classroom on her roller skate still, I'm like, God, I wish I had that childhood. I like roller skated into school.
Well, it's quite clever because it's, you know, there's parts that are sinister and dark, you're saying, it's this glamorous, dark porn world. But the lighting, the vibrancy, the saturated colours of the costumes, like you said, you've got Roller Girl on her little roller skates and she's always moving around the pool and at the disco or in the back of the limo behaving badly. And then Julianne Moore in this film as that kind of broken, coke-addicted, Oh, she's crumbling throughout, but still so goddamn glamorous.
Yeah, and also, again, it's the same thing where you have to contrast figures, because she's meant to be the sort of, if you like, the mother head girl of the Porn family over Heather Graham, who's the kind of younger ingenue. So they've got to be slightly different. So she's sort of younger in her rollerblades, her crochet, her vests, her short shorts, and, you know, her socks permanently rolled up to the knee. Whereas Amber Waves, who's the Julianne Moore figure, she's basically a bit older. She reminds me of a kind of, I don't know, porn 70s version of the Poochie thing with her silk headscarves. And when she's at the Porn Film Awards, she's in that purple sequin dress with the big trumpet sleeves. And she's in two pieces. She's in sarongs. She's in high platform heels.
She's like a walking Pinterest mood board of what I, you know, when you think of how often that decade is referenced.
All we want to do
at the moment,
is back,
you know, all
back.
We want to do is go back to the 70s in terms of the styling. And when I think of Marc Jacobs and designers who've referenced
Sonia Rykiel,
yeah, when you think of, you know, Amber Waves with her big lush red wavy hair and the bright flower behind the ear and those jewel colours, it's been referenced so many times. And in terms of film, I mean, Juliet, she's like sumptuous. She is the head girl.
She is the head girl of the porn world. Yeah.
Yeah, she really is.
Then the interesting thing then, though, in that is obviously, you know, it's not simply about porn. It's about their character disintegration, if you like. They obviously developed. Then at the end, she, her style has kind of softened as sort of it's kind of falling apart for her. And her hair's like straighter and she's wearing like softer clothes and that white slip dress she's in at the end, although she's still stuck in, you know, this seedy world, if you like.
Well, it's where you see the other side of her character, where she's, you know, a mother and she's lost custody and suddenly it's not so glamorous and it's all looking really shady. And it's not the Boogie Nights party. Suddenly you're like, this is all becoming a bit depressing.
Yeah, no, it's depressing. And apart from that iconic pool party scene, which is, you know, up there if you want something uplifting, and you want that amazing, innovative tracking shot he does when they're filmed under the water, which I think was like a completely new film technique at the time. And I think every fashion blog and every site I've ever read or seen, at some point in time, they post something of Roller Girl in her yellow Lolita sunglasses behind the Polaroid camera. You know, it's become such a definitive image in fashion.
Well, I suppose, because also when you
add all the things you could pick of the 70s, that one always reappears, you know?
It's the glossy, sugared version of what the 70s looked like. You know, you look back at pictures of the amazing Farrah Fawcett and all those kind of Charlie's Angels characters, but the Heather Graham version is just so saturated and glossy. And, you know, like you said, because it is made in 97, it's not actually a 70s film. It's just,
although I have to
like
say,
the
I
modern,
think, yeah.
like the modern version of the 70s, it is, of course, so retro.
But I think I think the costume people did well there, that there's still like a real authenticity to it. And it's still that like leftover kind of earthiness of like coming out of the hippie counterculture thing. You know, it's not kind of over the top glossy. There's still a kind of retro earthiness to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of costumes being transformed throughout, of course, Dirk Diggler, he starts out and he's just, you know, the kid in the t-shirt and the jeans, and then he doesn't wear a lot of clothes, and then he's in those kind of super glossy suits.
Those suits, I mean,
those ridiculous 70s porn king satin suits. But again, it is that journey. By the end, you're kind of looking at him, and well, we were discussing that end scene, you know, was it Marky Mark, that final display of Dirk Diggler's assets?
I think we've seen more of Marky Mark's, you know, body than his acting, haven't we?
Yeah, Marky Mark and what's in his pants. But it is that kind of the journey. I hate using that word, but there's no other word to describe when a character changes that much. You know, like we said, Melanie Griffith and Working Girl, or when they go from sort of rags to riches.
And I think also the clever thing about this film is it's very subtle, because it's actually crossing over a period of about 1977 to 84, where styling and trends and fashions changed a lot, and we see that as their characters disintegrate. So we go from Dirk Diggler in his satin lapel powder blue tuxedo, and then he starts wearing kind of those grey denim kind of jackets and he's kind of
looking like the boss,
showing his pain and
looking like the porn boss
lost his way
on his demise. Yeah. I have one more kind of surprise question, which I do spring on my guests in Admit One, and that is
fear. I can answer this.
If you had to choose someone to play you in the story of
Davina Cat,
who would you choose? And
why? This is a good surprise question.
I mean, we've had some exotic answers.
Have you?
We have had some very interesting ones. Well,
mine would be, just because I'm not sure where people get this from, it could be just because I have very dark hair, but a few people have said to me that I really remind them of Jennifer Connelly. So I would get Jennifer. Well, A, I think she's an amazing actress and I love her and I think she's great. So I would choose her.
Oh, what
a requiem for a dream.
Oscar winning choice there, Davina. Oscar winning. Yeah, I can see that. I dig that. If anyone said I was a bit like Jennifer Lawrence,
Connelly.
Oh, Connelly.
Dark, very dark.
Weirdly, I see Lawrence as well, though.
Oh, really?
In the face. Do you know what I mean? Producer nodding. Yeah. But also now you say Connelly. I mean, love her.
The dark haired, mysterious.
Really fancy
kind of
Paul Beatty. And she only wears Balenciaga. So that's
gotta
an
love
excellent
that.
Reference. Gotta love that. Davina Cat, thank you so much for coming
and taking part
in our London Fashion Week Admit
and
One
And give us
special.
Some feedback on your favourite fashion and film collaborations.
Yes, do always. Yeah, get in touch with us. Hashtag Admit One. Both Davina and I would love to hear your favourite fashion moments in film, which, I mean, there are just endless. So, Davina, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
That's it for this episode. Next week on Admit One.
I mean, whatever you say about him, he wrote some fantastic roles for women.
Film watcher, football lover, entertainment director of Heat magazine, Mr. Boyd Hilton.
And, you know, when then Mia Farrow, of course, became his partner and she was in all his films. I mean, incredible stuff. All the roles that she did with him are fantastic.
Don't forget to subscribe to Admit One on iTunes for more movie memories from my stellar lineup of guests. Admit One with Antonia O'Brien is an Audioboom production.